Actually, the first thing I went home is told my wife I got drawn and said, by the way, I'm now training for Western States.
This has changed the context of my entire running career.
Taking a Jolly Rancher at the bottom of the climb, throw it in your mouth, and that distracts you as you're climbing that hill or mountain. Granted, if it's a lot longer hill, mountain, that one Jolly Rancher will not last. That's
That's how we measure hills now. Is that a one or two Jolly Rancher hill?
Wait, what's that? What's that, Jimmy?
I said, you are an amateur. You got to raise your game.
So Bill Carr has just finished his first 100 ever, and we're not trying to do like a recap on Western States, so we're not going to say, and how was it coming up Devil's Thumb? But we're just going to talk about the preparation, you know, the whole significance of tackling, you know, a 100-mile event. What do you do? Where was your head? Just fun stuff that we talk about. So,
hey, Don, yeah. When you signed up for that race, where was your head?
It wasn't where it should have been.
It was about 12 o'clock midnight when you signed up for that.
I don't know. Okay, so we're recording, everybody. Let's see. Jimmy, say something to make sure you're online here. Recording.
Something to make sure you're online.
All right, that's good. You like that. You gonna start it off, Scott?
Yeah, I can do it. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
I am Jimmy Dean Freeman.
And I'm Don Freeman. And today we have a guest, in fact, in studio.
But who are we missing?
We're missing Faith Goss, and aren't we missing her? The light-hearted, light voice, always quick to come with the right question. The best question usually comes from Faith, doesn't it?
The best question always comes from Faith.
You know, and so in her honor, I will think of, if I come up with a good question, if any of us come up with a good question, let's submit it as a Faith question.
Okay.
I like that.
Is that all right with you, Jimmy? Are you good with that?
I'm not going to come up with a good question.
All your questions are good. Today in studio, we have Bill Carr. And Bill Carr is a local runner here in our area and just a great guy on the trail. He has the personality that you just want to be around. It's a guy that when you come up on the trail and you see him, you can't wait to stop because if you're going uphill, you're looking for an excuse. But with Bill, there's always some good exchange. He's got good energy, and chances are he might have a cheeseburger with him because this man has been known to run with some cheeseburgers in his backpack. Is that true, Bill?
That is true.
What kind of cheeseburger?
They are McDonald's cheeseburgers. Now, it's a special formula, though. You want extra ketchup because you want it juicy, but you don't want the pickles because they will make them too soggy. So it's extra ketchup, mustard, and onions, no pickles. You cut them in half, and they fit perfectly into a snack size bag. So you typically, for me, I'll carry four cheeseburgers on a training run.
Four cheeseburgers?
Yes.
So you have eight little pouches.
No, because one cheeseburger fits into pack.
Okay.
So it's easy. I wear a Nathan vest, so one goes in one side, the other one goes in the other side, and two go in the back.
I don't think I've ever heard of anybody eating cheeseburgers on a training run.
Well,
Changed the context of my entire running career.
Well, you know, the best thing about this whole formula is it's a international training food now, right? Because everybody has a McDonald's.
Everybody does have the Golden Archers are everywhere, so there's no excuse for anybody. And with all this newfangled trail food, I mean, I would think that it's fairly economical, right?
It is. The other thing is someone told me why I got hooked on it is because someone's like, it's got good carb, good protein, good salt. So I said, perfect.
Well, didn't we talk to somebody that said that they used dill pickles as a training food? Who did we talk to?
Pickles have great amount of electrolytes. I know that. Boxers back in the day before Gatorade used to drink pickle juice.
Yeah, that's what I remember somebody talking about drinking pickle juice.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Huh.
So maybe you got to put those dill pickles back on there, Bill.
No.
Just hold them out separately.
Okay, I have another question about cheeseburgers. Sorry to get cheeseburgers.
No,
but
it's
find a McDonald's that's open that will make a cheeseburger in the morning?
You don't. You buy them the night before and then
gross.
You put them in the refrigerator.
Gross.
And the nice thing is here in Sacramento area, because of the heat, you don't have to worry about them melting like a Snickers bar or anything like that in the heat.
So, you know, that reminds me. I had in college, I had a Korean a roommate that when a Big Macs would go on sale, he didn't have a car, and he'd ask me to drive him down to the McDonald's to buy. He'd buy like 30 Big Macs, and he'd put them in the freezer.
Wow.
And then he'd just take them out and microwave them.
Here's my question to you, Bill. Has any training partner of yours asked to have one of your hamburgers? Have you ever talked anybody into to partaking in your snack?
Oh, on numerous occasions. Actually, someone, my crew person and my pacer at States, was the one who got me hooked on to cheeseburgers.
How long have you been doing this?
Probably 6 months to a year now.
Okay.
And it works out pretty well for me. So she got me hooked on it, and I've known on a couple training runs that I've actually donated or given people some of the cheeseburgers, and they've liked them.
Has anybody else ever carried a cheeseburger that you know of that picked up on this?
I don't think I know of anyone who's actually started to convert over to carrying cheeseburgers.
Well, Don, you shouldn't be so surprised about this.
Oh, I've
because I remember a Rio del Lago race.
Oh yeah,
that you came in and one of our friends, Lee McKinley, was waiting to cheer you on, and he was eating a cheeseburger.
You know,
right?
I'm pretty careful.
You remember
with food.
This?
Yeah, I'm not a big mayonnaise eater, Jimmy Dean, and I'm really not one to share a burger with another man's lips, right? I mean, I just a little bit careful about that. But I couldn't see, although he had chomps out of this burger and there was mayonnaise oozing out of it, it looked so good. And I just chowed that down. I think I still owe Lee McKinley a burger. It was good.
Hey, so, Miles.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
I don't even marathon. I ate an In-N-Out double animal style.
And what portion of this at the end?
20.
Mile 20.
Come yeah, on. There's actually a video of that. I ate a bunch of other things before that in a L.A. Marathon food challenge.
They're doing things different down in L.A. We brought Bill Carr on because he has recently completed a 100-mile run. It happened to be Western States, but this particular podcast isn't about the run itself, but more the achievement. Because we believe we have two separate members of the audience out there, those that have run 100 miles and those that haven't. Right. I mean, I think everybody falls in one of those two, and if you're honest with yourself, you'll find you do.
If you're dishonest, you still do, right? Because it's either one or the other.
There's three categories. There's
What's the third? What's the third one?
There's people who have never attempted a 100-miler, people who have attempted and finished a 100-miler, and people who have attempted yet, but not yet finished a 100-miler.
Good point.
I almost need a diagram for that.
Well, I just learned of a gentleman in Northern California who had attempted four separate 100-milers, failed to finish all of them, and then finished Western States this past year in his fifth attempt. So,
well, who is he? We got to give him props.
I wish that I had his name off the top of my head.
Okay.
But I ran alongside another gentleman named Jeremy Paid at the Oil Creek 100, and in 2010 he attempted four and failed all four times, and since then has absolutely crushed the 100-mile distance, often finishing in the top two or three runners at a number of races. So
wow,
there are a number of people that it takes a few attempts to get the 100-mile finish under their belt, may not be the right term, on their belt.
Very good. So let's get a little background from you, Bill Carr. Tell us a little bit about your running career. How old are you right now? We're just going to ask. We never ask anybody how old they're, just because we haven't. But for people to get to know you, are we sitting in front of a 20-year-old or an 80-year-old?
I'm 38.
So 38. So just, I mean, you're in your prime, right? 38. That's good. Tell us about, did you run in college? Did you run from somebody chasing you for your milk money? I mean, give us a little background.
I did not run in college. In high school, I ran a little bit of cross country, but it was only because they needed seven people on the team. I will admit that sometimes, hopefully my high school coach is not listening, but I would drive myself to where we were supposed to actually be midway through the practice, run about a quarter of the practice, and then drive myself home. But when you needed seven people, I was always good for the seventh place knockout guy.
The seventh man.
So what converts you then to become now an ultra runner?
How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing it for about 5 years, and I started with the Folsom Bridges half marathon, I ran into one of my old coworkers, and he said, oh, why don't you come out and try a trail run? I said, hey, you know what? I'm pretty slow. I'm like a 10-minute road guy. And he's like, oh, don't worry about it. So on my first day, we started out at a place called at the Overlook, ran down to No Hands. Then he said, came back, and I'm like, hey, that wasn't too bad. So he then chose to take me down Cardiac and climb back up. And since then, I've been hooked for about the past 5 years.
And you have some, of course, 50Ks. You have some 50-milers. You have a couple 100Ks under your belt, right?
That's correct. I've done AR50 five times. I've done Miwok twice. And then I've also done Tahoe Rim 50-miler and also Headlands 50-miler. So I decided, let me try a 100-miler, and so I put my name into the lottery for state.
How long have you been trying to get into the lottery?
This was my first year, and I was lucky enough to get selected.
Oh, wow.
Hey, Jimmy, did you hear that?
How many times have you been in the lottery recently, Jimmy?
In the random lottery, I am 0 for 5. This will be my 6th year.
Do you feel guilty at all, Bill? That you went in one time and just on a whim, probably out just eating too much pizza one night, and said, you know what, I think I'm just going to go ahead and interstate.
No, because it was I thought it through, talked to my wife, got her approval to make sure because of the training involved, and she said, yes, I can put in. So I had a very supportive wife.
All of that said, no one should feel guilty for getting into states. Fate will decide when you get to do Western states, and when I get to do it in 2017, I'm excited.
So how many years when did you run your first 50? Because I want to try to put it in context. I think that there, and Jimmy, please weigh in on this a little bit. I think there needs to be a little bit of time and preparation to get ready for, an all day, all night run. I think you need to harden joints and get muscles to endure the long event. So I don't think it's something you can just one year all of a sudden, I'm going to run a marathon, a 50-mile, and then in the fall, I'm going to go out and run 100 miles. I think that's a recipe for disaster. Jimmy, do you have some thoughts on that? And then we'll get back to Bill, just what you did.
Yeah, I'm a perfect example of what not to do. My first ultra was a double marathon, and my second ultra was Angeles Crest 100. So, in fact, my third ultra was the Angeles Crest 100 a second time. I have been coaching more and more athletes of late who get in, 5 to 10 ultra distance races before their first dance with the century. And that I strongly advise. There's certain things, experience and Mark Twain's quote applies here. Good judgment comes from experience. And experience comes from bad judgment. So it just takes a while to make a number of mistakes and learn what kind of works for you. And, Bill sounds like a perfect example. If you're carrying, 8 halves of a McDonald's cheeseburger with a very specific amount of ketchup and mustard and onions on it, you've clearly experimented with a number of other things. And
We should probably explore that as a follow up question coming up. What else? I mean, what failed before the magic food? So we'll just pose that as a future question.
So you asked about a couple of my races.
Yeah, just
ballpark. It started in 2008. I did Way Too Cool. I did the AR
50K.
Thank you.
Good hilly run. Right.
Yes, and I enjoyed that. I rolled it over to American River 50-miler in 2008. 2009, I did American River again, and then 2010, I did American River 50-miler again, and I decided to go outside my comfort zone, and I jumped over to Headlands 50-miler, which is more of a hill.
Much more hilly. Uh-huh.
And that was my first real experience of no crew, no pacer, so 2010 was a tough Headlands 50. 2011, I tried my first 100-kilometer out in Miwok, and I learned a lot there because I got a great pacer at mile 40 who really cracked the whip on me, and I learned, wow, how good a pacer can be.
Who was that?
Sandra Ross.
Yeah, okay. Great runner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she was the one who, no nonsense, get in and out of aid stations. I've been known to be a little bit of a social butterfly at of the aid stations.
I think that doesn't surprise me.
No, I think I kicked you out of mile 78.1 this year, didn't I?
Probably.
I said, Bill, Auburn's calling. Get out of here.
And so from Miwok in 2011, I rolled it over and did Tahoe Rim 50 miler. And why I say... And yes, Don, you kicked me out of that aid station was because my running time, between my running time and my total time at Tahoe Rim, 50 miler, and Miwok this year was about an hour and a half I lost. Either
in aid stations?
I wasn't moving, and I was not pulling a Don and sleeping on the side of a trail. So I don't know where 90 minutes went, and I did not get lost. So I did... just slowly building up, and I thought, you know what, now I've got a 100K under my belt, I've got a tough 50-miler or two under my belt, so that's why I decided to step it up to the 100.
Hey, Jimmy, I'm going to pause for a second. Can you put your camera on?
Yes.
And I want to see if we can actively get you involved so you can give me a thumbs up or, you know, a hand up when you want to talk.
You want me to raise my hand like we're in class?
Kind of. That's what we do here. So that I know when you're, you know, like, dude, I've got something I want to say.
Actually do that here in studio.
Yeah. It makes it easy.
I'm just worried about the connection, audio plus video.
If you start to crash, it would just hit it off. Well, I'll let you know. But I'm on it right now. Can you see me?
No, I turned the video off on mine completely.
Let's see what happens. Mostly because I'm tired of looking at you in this finish line photo.
See, because you've never seen what the Angeles Crest finish line looks like in the dark.
Oh, I am recording there, Freeman. That's good. That's a dagger.
Ouch.
You didn't even prepare for the wound. You just
that hurt.
Stab deep. Are you still trying to get your camera going?
Yeah, I closed that window and I can't even find how to pull it up.
Bill, think about some of the things that failed you. You must have tried some other stuff. Or maybe just went to Cheeseburger. You could have just said, first shot, that's what I went for. It was great.
Hey, I'll tell you what failed me. I did a long training run.
We're still recording, right?
that I used an entire loaf of bread and an entire thing of peanut butter and an entire thing of jelly. So I had about like 24 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And I'll tell you, I do not take any peanut butter and jelly sandwiches at any aid station ever.
You got sick of them, huh?
Well, I don't like them during the run anymore because it conjures up some bad memories. I can eat them in a normal meal.
you call it peanut butter and jelly sandwich a normal meal?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess
Hell
so.
Hell yeah.
All right.
I don't think we're going to get video.
We're not getting video,
yeah.
Jimmy?
You're not going to get video. I'll dive in.
We're not embarrassed if you just sit there and just say, hey. All right.
Yeah, I've never had a problem asserting myself vocally.
Good. Okay, fantastic. So, Bill, was... I'm not editing any of this out, guys. I'm just not.
I think we need to go, okay, so he's run some 50s,
okay.
Some hard 50s, hilly 50s. He's run some 100Ks. You get drawn.
Right.
Drawings in December.
Correct.
And now you're going, oh crap, this is real.
Yes.
So what do you do? How do you go home and you're going, okay, now how do I change my training to accommodate and plan for this? What did you do?
Actually, the first thing I went home is told my wife I got drawn and said, by the way, I'm now training for Western States. And so I hired a coach and I used Julie and she was amazing. And it was very helpful. I would recommend whether you're doing a 50K, 50-miler, or 100-miler, get in a coach.
Julie Fingar of Fit to Run?
Yes, Julie Fingar, NorCal Ultras, up here.
Amazing, amazing lady, amazing athlete, amazing coach.
Completely agree with you. Very knowledgeable, very specific to what me as a runner needed. And so it helped me out because she was able to tailor the plan that says, Bill, catered to my styles of I typically like high mileage, and so I like to run also a lot. So she was able to develop the plan to what worked with my schedule, what worked to what I wanted to be doing for training. So I think getting the coach helped immensely is the one of the things that I first did there.
So what did she change in your training specifically for this 100-mile race?
What she changed for me was focus more on time than distance. Don't get wrapped up in the trying to hit X amount of miles. Look at how long you need to be out there. To give an example of the canyon, she would say, go out there for 6 to 8 hours. And I'm like, is that 24 miles? Is that 26 miles? Is that 30 miles? Exactly how many miles? And she's like, no, get your arms around how many hours versus specific miles. The other thing that she and I talked about is I have a tendency to read a lot of the blogs, the Facebooks. A lot of websites. And one of the things that she talked about is, okay, I've got to pull myself back from that because I could get wrapped up and sucked into the, well, so-and-so said they ran 30 miles Saturday, but should I change it to go this distance? Or someone's talking to me about they ran from point A to point B. Should I be going that? And so she was a great sounding board for me of, no, stick to your plan. You have a purpose for your plan. So
did she allow for some flexibility in your plan?
She definitely did.
Yeah, talk to that.
So when I was starting to have a little bit of nagging IT issues, she said, okay, let's change your plan. She also, when I told her what race is, she also said, remember, your goal race is Western State. So what I did is I used sort of a building block. Up here in Northern California, we have what's called Way Too Cool 50-kilometer. Then we have American River 50-miler. Then we had Miwok 100-kilometer, and then led straight into Western States 100-miler.
And use those as secondary races, as training races.
And that, yes. And she said, hey, Bill, remember, your goal race is Western States. So when I was out doing those races, I focused on training. I focused on fueling. I focused on how am I feeling versus trying to say, go as fast as I can or as hard as I can. I looked at those are the training races for me, and I think that helped a lot also. So,
how were you able to keep yourself from being a competitor once you put a race bib on? Were you able to hold yourself back and keep in context as, hey, this is just a race to get the miles in, to get the hours in, to be supported? Or did you find yourself still trying to get your best time? Because I have a hard time with that. You know, you put that bib on, you just all of a sudden start revving up.
Well, first of all, I'm a back of the packer guy, so we got to say that. So for me, racing is just finishing. So I will say Way Too Cool, which was the first race. It's sort of the done it about four times before this year. It's a 50-kilometer, and I ran it. I wish I could say I held back, but no, I knew a lot of people. It's sort of the, where is my training coming into that point?
Yeah, because it's a good measure, right? If you've done it before, you don't, you just, you want to go out there and say, okay, where's my starting point then? Because this is about April, right?
In March timeframe.
Okay, so I mean, so now that's pretty good windows to kind of check in and do a temperature check, if you will, to see where you're at.
Very true. And then for me at American River, I actually dropped my time by going slower this year than I have typically in the past.
Wait, you dropped your time by going slower.
So I guess I slowed down. So typically the previous year I had done about 9:40. This year I had done about 10:10. So I guess when I say dropped, I mean slowed down.
Okay.
And that was a little bit of an ego check there. Mm-hmm. But I looked at my training and I said, you know what? I've been doing more hill work, more climbs. I've done less flat running sections.
And so the race you're talking about is a flatter race.
Yes.
Let me ask you this question. How did you feel at the end of this 50-mile flatter course at 9:40 versus your 10:10 finish? Did you come in fresh, feel with some legs left at, when you went slower?
I did. I will say my ego was very bruised. I don't think I can use some of those words on the podcast. But
you can. We can bleep them out.
So coming in at 10:10, I had to remember that was not my goal race. And so the time did not matter. But I learned a lot because I tried a different pacer for a middle 8 section, 8 miles. I tried a little bit different fueling. And so I said, you know what? My time slowed down, but I realized I had not taken any caffeine at all on that 50-mile race, and I had usually done a lot of caffeine before. But someone had said, stay off of caffeine as much as possible because you want to hold off when you're doing your 100-miler. So when I was doing AR50, I said, let me try and go no caffeine that whole race.
That was Lee McKinley. Lee McKinley mentioned that on this podcast. Yep. You may have heard it there. Jimmy Dean.
I also want to say fate stepped in with Bill in that he got into Miwok this year, and this year's Miwok was one of the best 100-mile mountain race prep training run races that I've been a part of. It was absolutely brutal, steep climbs, steep descents, and Bill got a great time on his feet workout, and I'm sure that that gave you quite a bit of confidence rolling into Western States.
Hey, Jimmy, speak to that about selecting your races, your races that mimic your actual A race. You know,
well, I mean, specificity of training is ideal. It's not essential. Obviously, American River is nothing like Western States. However, the last 15 to 20 miles of American River are on single track trails that lead into Auburn, so that they do have some similarities to the last 15 miles of Western States. Whereas Miwok is really a rolling hillside, mountainside race that this year got considerably more difficult. Many of the athletes competing in this year's Miwok were a solid 90 minutes slower than some of the normal times that they run there, including Dave Mackey, who won the race in about an hour and 20, hour 25, slower than what he's run at Miwok. So there were some really rough climbs and descents that were great power hiking workouts and then barreling downhill to get that eccentric muscle contractions. And it was, I think, about 6-7 weeks out from Western States, and tough, but enough time to sort of bounce back and recover from it. The old Miwok course was a very popular race among people training for Western States, and they used to say you take your Miwok time and you double it and you have your Western States time. And looking at Bill's 2011 Miwok at 1350, 1350 doubled is 2750, and he was pretty darn close to that at Western States.
2749.
Yeah, that's a pretty good formula. And Jimmy, I've heard you speak in the past about training your hiking, your hiking muscles, and that's, if you're running a mountain course, there's going to be some hiking on it if you're going to do 100 miles. So you better train those too, and not just show up as a runner and then find yourself in the middle of a hiking part of the race.
It really depends on what you signed up for. I mean, if you're going to go do the Javelina 100 or Rocky Raccoon or Umstead, training to hike is not going to be of great benefit to you. But you, unless you're a guy or a gal that's going to run, 13 to 16 hours, you better learn to throw in some walk breaks here and there. Whereas a mountain race of the likes of Western States, Angeles Crest, Wasatch, Hard Rock especially, you better learn to power hike and get on some trail and terrain, if it is accessible to you, where you practice that, focused hike. I can hike uphill on a steep climb as fast as about 80% of that race field can run if they're pushing it at top gear. Only the top mountain runners who are running every step can put some time on me on my power hike. And that said, if you're working really hard to run up a hill while I'm power hiking, you might put 30 seconds to 90 seconds per mile on me on that climb, but when we get on the other side and start running downhill, there's a good chance I'm going to make up that time.
Jimmy's a good downhiller. I've followed him downhill. So what's your secret on power hiking besides your genetics and some glutes and some hamstrings? Do you have any tips for us on this end of the podcast?
Keeping your body upright. Stay perpendicular to the horizon. Don't lean into the hill and break at the waist. I generally tell people, pull the hips forward and shorten and quicken the strides, so you're not lifting your feet up so much. And then walk like you mean it. It's not a loafing sort of casual walking the dog kind of pace. It's a quick, concerted effort where you're keeping your hips forward and you're turning your feet over quick and you're pulling your heels through.
So Jimmy, what do you think about, you know, the Killian method of hiking a hill? You've seen him, and I've since watching him, I've seen more and more videos and more pictures of people where they put their hands on their knees and they lean forward and they actually push on their knees as they take each step.
It depends on the hill. I mean, there's a lot of hills in Hard Rock. I shouldn't even call it hills. There's mountains in Hard Rock with scree climbs where the hands on the knees type of thing is appropriate, but it has to be a certain grade. I would say something over 15% grade where that becomes necessary.
So on the steeper hills, it's okay to do that. But if it's an incline up to that crossover grade, keep your hips forward, stand up tall, and walk like you mean it.
Now, Bill,
here's the thing. When you're putting your hands on your knees, I think I lost you guys.
No, we got you. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Okay. When you're putting your hands on your knees, the grade should be steep enough that your body mass is still directly over your legs. The idea of not breaking at the waist and not leaning forward is keep yourself in kinetic alignment. So your mass, your upper body is not forward of your lever, which is your legs. You want maximum efficiency comes from having your, you know, strike point directly beneath your mass. So if you're leaning forward into those hills, a lot of times your body is forward of your legs and you're going to throw a lot of energy away.
If I can interject for two things.
Bill, this is not your podcast.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. We're absolutely... please, go.
Well, I was going to say two things for me on hill climbing. One, every hill, mountain is different. But someone taught me is before you tackle hill, if you know how long it's going to take you, Scott, you actually told me that on a training run, is if you can practice and time how long it typically will take you to go from the bottom to the top, when you tackle that in race day, it makes a world of difference. Because you know, okay, I'll give the example, yes, I don't want to go too much on Western States, but the climb of the thumb ballpark in training will take me 45 minutes. I planned on race day 55 minutes. So mentally, before I even got to that hill, I knew how long to anticipate. So that was a great mental thing I did. The other thing that someone had taught me is taking a Jolly Rancher at the bottom of the climb, throw it in your mouth, and that distracts you as you're climbing that hill or mountain. Granted, if it's a lot longer hill, mountain, that one Jolly Rancher will not last.
That's how we measure hills now. Is that a one or two Jolly Rancher hill?
That's a two Jolly Rancher hill. Bill, I've got to tell you that's not enough to distract me, a Jolly Rancher. And I'd bite that sucker so fast so I could get up that hill. When this is gone, I'm done? Are you kidding? Go ahead, Bill.
Don, it all depends on what flavor of Jolly Rancher.
You know, I can't find the fire like I used to. The fire was hard to find. Cherries and watermelon everywhere.
Sour apple all the way.
What about you, Bill? What do you pop in at the bottom of the thumb?
Pineapple? I don't like that. I think it's the blueberry one or the blue one is the one I don't like.
Stay away from the blue ones. It'll tear that room apart like Van Halen used to do when they got brown M&Ms.
But what they told me was stick it in your mouth, try and suck on it the whole way up, and it's a distractor. You get a little bit of sugar, takes your mind off the climb.
So I've learned two things tonight. One, yeah. I need to go buy some cheeseburgers at McDonald's. And number two, I need to have a little handful of Jolly Ranchers for the hills.
You know, what's Sunny Blende going to say when she hears all this about our trail nutrition? you know, I learned the same. You know, I think it's a valuable thing that you just stated that came from Scott, that came from you. That came from Julie, that came from Dana Gard and to Mike Hernandez.
It's a hand-me-down statement.
And that hand-me-down statement, when I first got into those canyons and started running, and these veterans would say, oh, that bush means we're 10 minutes from the top. Oh, that rock means we're halfway. And they had all these landmarks, and they knew exactly the timing, too. 21 minutes in, we should be up there in another. And the clock really became something to help them manage each one of these climbs. And they knew all of these pieces in the landscape throughout these runs.
The only problem is what if you're traveling to the race and you don't know what the race course is like.
Well, now we have GPSs. And so, you know, you say I have 8.2 miles to the next aid station. You can watch that. So I think the GPS has changed the game a bit in ultra running.
And I think you can kind of plan it out too. I mean, you can look at the race elevation profile and say, okay, you know, this climb is 1,100 vertical feet over a mile and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that on my local training hill, I can do that in 45 minutes. And so you can kind of plan your run out, even if you don't know the course, and get kind of close.
I think there's some advantages to knowing the course, and I think you can spin it. So there's some advantage of not knowing the course. Going in with ignorance, well, it didn't work out for me too well, but it motivated me.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes motivation is what fuels your race. You know, so you got to find your motivator, find your mojo.
Don, the fact that you didn't know the Angeles Crest 100 course had nothing to do with what happened to you last year.
Let's not rehash those things.
He's reaching, Jimmy. He's reaching.
Jimmy, I have paid a counselor. I can't tell you how much to try to erase all of those memories, you're bringing them back.
You haven't paid a counselor anything. You paid for a registration again. You're coming back to relive one of those memories.
I was going to say his counselor fee was this year's entry fee.
Yeah.
So I want to get back to
Bill Carr's interview.
To Bill Carr's interview.
It's about Bill Carr. Yeah. So when I said earlier, Bill, it is your podcast. So I didn't want to come off as a kind of jerk.
I want to get back to the coaching thing. You know, not only did Julie set, you know, she said, okay, this is how many hours you're going to run on which days and how to ramp up and increase your mileage and do some hill work and all that sort of stuff. Did she also work with you on nutrition, talking to you about what to eat, what not to eat, how much to eat, electrolytes,
cheeseburger,
that sort of stuff?
Good question.
You there, Bill? You there, Bill?
Don, who's your counselor? Can I see that counselor? No. Julie would have offered it, but knowing my personality style and my eating habits, she didn't go down that road.
Okay, so it was an option.
It was an option, and she definitely has helped me before, but I will eat about a half a gallon of ice cream in 2 to 3 days. So remember, I eat the cheeseburgers, so when she talks about nutrition, may not always sink in.
Okay.
So
okay.
She did offer, she did suggest some things to help me, but mainly for me it was just what worked with my stomach, what worked for me, what did I want to carry. So
okay,
sounds like you're on the same diet as me, Bill.
Yes.
You see food, you eat it.
Exactly. Now I was going to jump back to Miwok just to talk a little bit about the 100K, because looking at either building block for whether it's your first 50K, 50 miler, 100K, 100 miler, I went into Miwok, which is 100 kilometer. You were not allowed to pick up a pacer till 10 miles before the finish. So I said, I'm not going to ask anyone to pace me. I don't need anyone to crew me. Why am I going to ask someone to drive 2 hours, crew me for the day, pace me for 10 miles? Well, I learned immensely, I desperately needed a crew. I desperately needed the pacer. So again, learning from that, realizing it wasn't my A race, my goal race, I learned a lot from that earlier race, because I said, you know what, as early as I can get crew, I want crew. As early as I can get my pacer, I want a pacer. And my pacer I wanted the person who would talk to me, tell me stories, help guide me through, because I knew I could pretty much run, but I wanted the person who could take my mind off of, I'm just running, keep moving forward. So I did learn a lot by that earlier races, so.
I think there's so much to learn from those pre-race races, right?
Mm-hmm.
Things to practice, you know, trying this shoe or trying this, you know, working through the details. Is this shirt going to chafe me here underneath the arm? Because
where do I need to apply Vaseline?
Right. I might cut that out a clip. We might use that in an intro. but, you know, the foods to eat. You know, I tried something different. I tried Trailwind on this recent race this weekend and exclusively and found that it works for me.
It rocks.
It does. And so there's a lot of things that you can work through. And running by yourself On training runs, you're running with people many times, but I think it's important even on training runs to run solo, because mm-hmm. on races you run solo a lot. So you have to work through being a solo runner sometimes to mimic race conditions. Jimmy Dean? Jimmy?
Yes.
Any thoughts on that?
I have nothing to add, Don.
Well, then I'll just keep on chatting.
I want to get to, so we're post Western States, post Bill's first 100-miler. You successfully completed it. I'm going to ask a personal question here. Did you meet your A goal at Western States?
Yes, I did. Okay. I exceeded it.
Okay. So you came in with a goal time, an A goal time, and you actually beat it.
Yes. Nice. Okay.
That's exciting. So we're 2 weeks post this 100-miler. You have time to reflect. You're starting to recover. If or when you try your next 100-miler, how would you change your training to prepare for your next 100-miler? What would you change in your training?
Are you going to do another one? Let's start with that. And then
that's
go to
a good question.
Yeah. Faith? You going to do it again? Oh, yeah. If Faith was here, she would say, yeah, here's the obvious question, you guys. Are you going to do another 100, Bill?
Definitely going to do another 100. Not sure which one or when or where. I think because I live in NorCal area, I think I want to try and stick in this area. But there are a lot of great other 100s out there. Partly being a family man, working with a young son, I'm sort of limited just out of my personal preference of I try and stick in this area because of financial family type deal. So I don't know my next 100 when it'll be, but definitely want to do another 100-miler. Actually looking at possibly a fall in the 50. I have to run that by Joy. So definitely you were asking about... Definitely I'll get a coach again. I think that helped me a lot, is having a coach guide me, direct me, give me good pointers along the lines. Another thing that I will also do is look at some tune-up races or other races that I can use to learn from. Like you said, Don, is try going solo, see what it's like. Try using a little bit of crew. Try different foods to try and learn from there.
During that race, during your first 100, did you go into some just dark places, some hard places? I imagine in your mind, in preparation, you said there's going to be some pain, suffering, and carnage, and just the most difficult experience of my life. Did you witness that?
I did twice. That I can remember right now. Probably a lot more. But
tell us about those. When did they happen? At what point in the race? What miles?
So at Western States, basically the first, I'm a slow guy, it took me about 7.5 hours to get the first 31 miles. So you start to a spot called Robinson Flat. It's about 31 miles. It was pretty much raining.
It was cold this year.
Cold.
Miserable.
Well, Don, you've seen me on a couple training runs, and you guys have heard about my cheeseburgers. So I pack, like, food. I don't know when I'll get my next meal.
He looks like an aid station. I almost feel sorry for him. He's running with
a pack mule.
He's running with a backpack that most people would be out on a week excursion.
That is true. I've weighed my pack. On training runs, it's been known to be 10-plus pounds.
Wow.
So I decided to start out Western States in a T-shirt. In shorts. I had no gloves, no jacket, no arm warmers, nothing except for T-shirt and shorts. So
now I'm really impressed that you finished.
It was very cold. So why I bring all this up is you were talking about the dark points.
Yeah.
Well, I came into mile about 26 or so. I think it's called Duncan Canyon. I was torrential downpour, soaked to the bone. Looked at two people, Lisa and Bill, and I said, I need a technical shirt. Which one of you is giving me one right now?
This is one of your crew?
Oh, no. They were just two random people that I knew.
They were friends along the trail, and you're stripping them out of their clothes.
And if you notice, Lisa. So I was like, Lisa, I just need a shirt.
You would have worn a pink shirt.
Oh, we'll get there in just a second.
Sports bra.
Oh, it's getting better.
So luckily, a guy by the name of Mike was out there. He found a shirt. He gave me his technical shirt. So I quickly swapped out of that. So then the next, so that was one of the dark points I hit. It's just because it was so cold. Got through that, and then going into a place called Duncan Canyon, which is a downhill and then a climb out. So it's probably, I'm going to say, 5 miles or so. And I really hit a lull in there. And then the one thing that got me through it is I had to focus on the positive. And the thing that really helped me was thinking of my son at the finish line running around Placer track. So that was when I hit the lull for me. It's like, you know how many times I've been running in the night or early morning, and I usually leave him a note before I go out, and just thinking he's going to be there when I finish, so I cannot quit.
Yeah.
So that got me too.
Yeah, you gotta have something like that.
And so that happened at what, about mile 26, right?
About 26 to 30.
That's early for a 100-mile race. You must be thinking to yourself, what in the heck have I got myself into?
I did. I started to get to that low, but luckily my son, thinking of him, got me into mile 31. That's where I got my crew, and she knew I was going to be wet. So, of course, she had a long sleeve shirt, and it was all black. So now I've got to go from the pouring rain to where it starts to warm up, and I have three massive climbs, and I'm in a long sleeve black shirt doing all these climbs. And it was a female shirt. So
you did look shapely in it, I'll tell you that.
So I would say I probably, those were the two coming into mile 26 and to 31 were two of my lows. What helped me was because I had run a lot of the course beforehand. I knew once I got to Robinson, I knew the course to the finish.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I was going to go fast, but I knew the area. I knew what to expect. So that helped me. And what I did is I played the aid station to aid station game. Someone had told me. I had written down on a 3x5 card, and I actually brought it in, was how many miles, my average time it should take me to get to every aid station. So I just played, get to the aid station, should take me this long. Get to the next aid station, should take me this long. And that's what made it through for me.
You broke it up into mini races.
Yeah, I would say for this 100, what I did is I broke it up into getting into Robinson Flat, which is mile 30, basically, getting into Michigan Bluff, which is about mile 55, getting into Forest Hill, which is mile 62, getting to the river, mile basically 78, and getting to the finish line, which was 100 miles. So for me, it was
point
breaking
two.
Up.
100.2.
Thank you.
And I saw you at 78. You looked good. You were in good spirits. You were laughing and looked like you were having a good time.
I saw him at Forest Hill, and he looked great. Yeah.
And I think I just, because the coaching helped, I think having the crew out there helped, having a couple of those longer runs leading up to this race helped a lot. And then also staying conservative, because I was just looking online, and basically the first aid station I came in at 301 place. By the time I hit mile 62, I had dropped down to 260, so I had picked up a little places. And then I finished at 222nd. I think part of the reason was because I remember on one of the podcasts you were talking about rabbit hunting.
Yeah.
And I just started picking and picking and picking. I'm like, you know what? I still have the legs. Let me try and go. So I held. And again, I'm not a fast guy because I'm a 27:49, 28-hour guy.
That's fast for me.
So to me, it was staying conservative until I knew. And then I opened it up.
You know my position on that. Anybody to the right of you is extra tough, and anybody to the left of you in your finish line is super fast. So you are the dividing line.
We had a few comments on Facebook about that comment, actually. Right. Yeah.
They're probably because I stole it somewhere. And yeah. They're probably
they were claiming plagiarism.
Yeah,
law.
That's Freeman. He's plagiarizing.
Is Jimmy still with us?
Oh, yeah.
I am definitely still with you.
So a second, your second 100, Jimmy. Your thoughts on this? You know, the first one is so big and grand. You don't know what to expect, and just the fact that you have to go accomplish it is almost enough to motivate you and move you through. And now you go into your second one, and it's like, well, I've been there and I've done it, and I've attacked that dragon and I've survived. What motivates you for the second one?
I generally say try and pick a different race for your second one, because the danger of the sophomore slump in the 100-mile distance is you no longer going in wondering if you can finish 100 miles. You now have the burden of knowledge. Knowing you can finish it also gives you a little bit of confidence that can bridge into overconfidence, because you need to look at so many details. So many things can happen that can derail a race. And if you're not present front of mind with those things, which fear can definitely help, picking a secondary race or secondary course will keep things fresh I'm a big advocate of the Rio del Lago 100 miler, which is also in your backyard up there. Don Freeman is a strong advocate of the Angeles Crest 100 miler, both California races. So we'll keep you relatively close to home.
I want to comment on what you just said, because like Bill, I'm in this, the same boat where I have completed only one 100 mile race, and frankly, I think that I toy with going back and forth whether I'm scared to death of the second one, because I'm scared that I think that I have the confidence that I know that I can complete 100, and I'm afraid that if I go into another 100, it's going to kick my butt and I'm going to have to drop at like mile 10 because I didn't prepare, because the first one scares the living snot out of you. It scares you into training hard more than you would normally train. And I need to. So I'm kind of toying with that back and forth, where I think, okay, my next 100 miler, either I'm going to do well and finish again, or I'm going to totally blow up. And that could be devastating, I think, to my ego.
I'm there with you, because I was thinking, Jimmy, you were talking about the sophomore slump, and I was looking at, okay, I did Way Too Cool AR. The following year, I went back to Way Too Cool and AR 50 and 50 kilometer, 50 miler there. And I sort of had that sophomore slump of, I know what I've done. I know how much training I need to do. And you're trying to overthink it. And similarly with Miwok doing the 100K. I did it the year before. This year going in, granted a totally different course, but I'm thinking, I know what my splits are. I know what my training is. So yeah, going for my second 100, I think I want something different, but yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I know my second sophomore slump, as you're talking about, my second AR 50, the 50-mile run, I was able to put on 2 hours from my original finish
slower?
Time. Slower.
Oh.
Because I thought I had it. I knew
you
the game.
You thought you were experienced and you were an ultra runner.
I shot out of that starting line like I was running a 5K. And at mile 19, my quads were cramping and I was just dumb. So yeah, you can do some dumb things your second time,
but or your fifth or sixth, right, Don?
I had a streak where every time I did a 100 mile or longer race for the first time, I finished, and every time I repeated it, I DNF'd. So I DNF'd my second Angeles Crest, I DNF'd my second Oil Creek, and it wasn't until my third attempt at repeating a race that I finally got over that overconfidence hump.
Well, I'm not overconfident anymore. I know that lack of preparation will hand you a reminder that distance needs to be respected. You have to respect the trail, or it will remind you that it needs to be revered as something.
Regardless of the distance.
Any distance. Yeah. Any distance. Well, Bill Carr, you're awesome. I mean, I'll tell you that I was out there and volunteering, and I remember that my very first exposure to the 100-mile race was at that very aid station. And I remember everybody that came through, whether they were the lead runners, the mid-pack, or the back, I looked at them, and I said, man, you guys are so awesome. I just want to just look at you and just be around you. And now that I've been around the sport a little bit and have even got to participate in some of these events, I still look at everybody the same way. Isn't the guys coming through, yeah. I'm like, man, you're so awesome. The mid-pack guys and the guys coming in the end, man, you guys are so tough and so awesome. I just really respect the runner and the accomplishment and what you've done, Bill.
Yep.
You're awesome, and you've done it, and that's cool.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I could not have done it without the support of a lot of friends, family,
absolutely,
the volunteers out there, the aid station. I mean,
wife.
Yes, my wife.
Hello.
Wife was very supportive, always has been. And then also my son, he actually showed up at mile 62 about 9:30 at night with a sign. I thought it was the cutest, because he was all proud to show the sign, but he had it upside down.
How old's your son?
6.5. So.
And did he run around the track at the end?
He did. And he actually beat me. I'm like, could you slow down a little bit? I'm like, Daddy's not feeling too good.
He's going to go to school here in the fall and say, what did you do this summer? I beat my dad in a 100-mile race.
And there's a lot to be said for going out and signing up for these races and accomplishing whatever distance, right? Whether you know, some of the people that make it to mile 38 may have endured more than some of the people that finish the entire race. Scott, I think you said that last.
Yeah,
last
I think we talked about that you know, those people that kind of poo-bash, you know, DNFers, you know, they just don't understand the sport. And you know, those people that went out to Western States or any 100 that DNF, I guarantee you that they went through more pain and suffering than most of those finishers did, and they deserve our respect and our admiration.
You know, as somebody who's DNF'd 200 milers, to understand exactly what the anatomy of something like that is, I also have heard many old timer ultra runners say, you're not truly an ultra runner until you've finished 100, until you've DNF'd a race, and until you've puked in an ultra run. So
what was the last one?
Puked during a race.
Oh, I think
vomit. Yeah, we've got that covered. You got that covered, Bill?
Oh, yes, on good. Numerous occasions.
yeah, that's an easy one. I think every orifice has been used.
You know, I can't remember if we talked about this. I'm going to throw a quick interjection here. Don, when he paced me last year at Western States, brought Tums along. I have never trained with Tums. I've never had stomach issues, but I did, and the Tums saved my life. So when I was going out to pace this year, I grabbed a little bottle and I filled it full of Tums, and guess what? I was able to pay it back because this guy had never used Tums. We got out there, and his stomach started to turn, gave him some Tums, and it was a lifesaver. So thank you very much, Don.
Well, if it's on the aid station table, it's there for a reason, right? Ginger ale's out there a lot of times, and that's just good down-home. It's chicken soup is out there. I mean, these guys that have come before us have figured out what to put on the aid station tables. Usually that stuff's pretty good.
Except for those potatoes.
Ugh. Oh, you know, there were breakfast burritos. Did you have some breakfast burritos?
I did.
There?
I was going to say, you talked bad about the potatoes. That's the only thing I pretty much ate most, and I've never had soup before.
I'm not taking
soup is my best friend now.
Isn't that great?
I'm not taking any nutritional advice from a guy that carries 8 hamburgers along with him on a training run.
Did you bring hamburgers on Western States? Did you bring them?
I did.
Did you eat any of them?
Yes. I also had a turkey sandwich. I also had a milkshake out there.
Is that like a party?
You probably gained weight, didn't you?
Yes, I did. You were talking about puking. Totally unrelated. Quick side tangent was, in one of my earlier training runs about 4 years ago, I was so worried about being dehydrated between about 20 miles on AR-50. I drank about 300 ounces, puked that all up because I drank too much water. So you can always learn.
You can always learn something.
So maybe you should induce some vomiting. No, I'm joking.
You know, people have talked about that, Jimmy, about putting themselves into a bunk situation so they can learn how to get out of it.
Yeah, I often use a training run or a training race to try to throw myself under the bus. in certain races, you don't have to try. Miwok this year was a pretty solid bonk-type race.
Yeah, I find those bonks happen on their own. I don't need to go seek them. I think they just find me, so I don't have to purposely put myself in there. Bill Carr, congratulations to you. You are a hero, and wear your buckle proudly wherever you go.
And everybody else who has done well so far this year that has finished their races, regardless of the distance, congratulations.
Jimmy Dean, thanks for joining us from Southern California. I appreciate you keeping the temperatures low down there and the inclines. You're flattening them out, moving some of the scrub, some of the rocks, some of the poodle dog bush off the trail down in San Gabriel Mountains. As I come down to visit you. So thanks for being here today.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Trail Runner Nation. Go to trailrunnernation.com. Get on there. And
where do you find us on Facebook?
Well, let's not forget about Jimmy Dean's Facebook, too. So We Are Nation.
You're avoiding the...
We Are Nation is Twitter. Facebook.com. We Are Facebook? What is it? Come on. Help me out.
Facebook.com/ Okay. Trail Runner Nation.
And if you want to find Jimmy and his Southern California Coyotes, which is a great group. Oh, and I know we're at the end. I'm stretching this out. But Jimmy, your comment on Facebook on the last runner that came in was so awesome. All in. When that your last runner came through, completed the 100-mile event, one of your Coyotes, and you reported on it like it was a news flash, and you said, all in. That's good stuff.
Good stuff.
Where do we find you, Jimmy?
CoyoteRunning.com, Twitter, Coyote Running, and Facebook, SoCal Coyotes, a.k.a. Coyote Running.
You do some organized runs out there if you're in the Southern California area and you want to get hooked up with some knowledgeable trail runners. What would we do?
We have organized runs. Every Thursday morning, we have a social trail run in the Santa Monica Mountains at 6:10 in the morning. And we've got a Tuesday night and Saturday or Sunday morning training program run with new runs being added all the time.
So trail runners, if you want to get some one-on-one with Jimmy and his Coyotes that are very knowledgeable, and he has a group of them out there, and I've got a chance to meet many Coyotes. They're so friendly, and to meet them on other runs and talk to them, they know what they're talking about, and they're happy to share. They love the trail. So thanks, Jimmy. Get out there and run. Mas.
Thanks again, guys.
All right, Jimmy Dean. Hey, thanks for coming on.
You got to keep them separated. Separated.